Hey, just wanted to now introduce Adrian Holovaty. He's a Chicago-based journalist and programmer. He's the founder of everyblock.com. If you haven't looked at that, you should definitely check it out. And that sort of has its origins back in 2005 with chicagocrime.org, which was one of the first Google Maps mashups and was kind of milestone, I think, in many ways, and it was a really interesting project. He's also, it's one of these overachieving guys, as so many of these people are, he's also the co-creator of Django, the Python-based framework, and it's a great pleasure to have him here, and we really want to thank Govis as well, who are supporting us, and also because of Govis's support, Adrian is here with us today, so please give him a warm welcome. Thank you.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for the nice welcome, and is this a beautiful room? This is just tremendous. It's like the nicest place I've ever spoken in. Really cool. So I'm going to do two things for the next 35 or 40 minutes. I'm going to show you a project that I'm working on called everyblock.com. And then with that context, I'm going to give you a couple of lessons and takeaways that we've discovered over the year and a half that we've been working on it. Sort of, I tried to extract a bunch of lessons that any web developer or person working on the internet might be able to use. So first, a very quick introduction of what EveryBlock is. It started in, back in 2005, and I think it's really important to keep in mind that mapping on the internet, like sort of slippy maps, maps that you can dynamically click and drag, are only like 3.5 years old, maybe 3 3/4 years old. Back in 2005, there were a couple of us on the internet who were Google Maps had just come out, and we were working sort of hurriedly on reverse engineering it to see if we could embed the maps on our own pages. It was very, very exciting. And now when I see all these like very nice GUI ways of embedding maps, I kind of feel like, oh, when I was your age, I had to look at this obfuscated JavaScript and figure it all out. One of the very, very early experiments in Google Maps API hacking was by this guy from New Zealand, actually, called Follower. He wouldn't even use his real name because he wasn't sure whether he'd get in trouble for hacking the API. And this is what one of his experiments looked like. Embedding some sort of fire information on a map of Seattle. And of course, the big, bright, bold red thing, no, this couldn't be any less official. I don't want to get in trouble for dealing with Google. At around that time, there was first this seminal mashup that I'm sure most, if not all of you, have seen called Housing Maps, that at the time was just called Craigslist plus Google Maps. And just that name really speaks to how important that was. Just the fact that someone had combined Craigslist and Google Maps, it didn't even need to have a special name, just Craigslist plus Google Maps. Wow. So, and shortly after that, I was kind of personally disappointed that this came second. But I was working on this at the same time, and this is a site that I launched called chicagocrime.org. And I'm going to show you a couple of screenshots from this because they lead up to the work in EveryBlock. So this was a mashup of crime data in the city of Chicago, which is where I live. So I was able to screen scrape all sorts of, essentially every reported crime from the Chicago Police Department's website, which was kind of clunky and didn't offer a lot of ways to browse the information. So I pulled it onto this site, chicagocrime.org, and combine it with Google Maps so that you can browse it in all sorts of different ways. So by type of crime, here's all the mob action appropriate for Chicago. Here's crimes by location, so you can see which crimes happened in hotels versus on the street versus an apartment versus in a barbershop. Bad haircuts, not yet tabulated. All the crimes that happened on a particular day, all the crimes that happened on a particular hour on a particular day. Crimes along a route, so you could draw the route that you took to your train station or the route that you went jogging every day, and it would show you which crimes happened along that route that you drew. But the most interesting thing in my opinion, about this site was that it broke everything down to the block level. So every block, no pun intended, had its own web page. So this was the page for the 2400 block of North Halsted Street, which showed you exactly where that was on a map, and then all the crime that has happened directly on that block in a nice, easy-to-use timeline. Now, by block, I mean sort of blocks, there's different concepts, and just for the sake of being unambiguous, what I mean here is one segment of a street from one side street to another street. So if you look at it sort of on a satellite view, that would be one block with its own page, that would be another, that would be another. So I really like this idea of slicing and dicing this information by blocks. Like, you can't really get more granular than that without getting kind of scary, like everyhouse.com, right? I don't want to get into that. So I immediately, almost immediately after I launched the site, I wanted to start adding more information, so more than just crime and more than just Chicago. And the problem was I couldn't really work on it because I had a full-time job and this was a side project that I did for fun, and it's sort of hard work getting all these data sets. But I finally ended up getting a grant to work on this full-time. And the my idea is, and was, that you can't really put, I want to set out to make a newspaper that's personalized for every block. So you don't just have crime, you have really anything that's happening around that block, and not just on the block, but maybe within a small radius around it. The problem is you can't really hire a newspaper reporter to sit on every block and report the news. It just doesn't scale, obviously. And it's sort of a long tail problem because journalists only tend to cover the really high impact stories, right? So people getting murdered and the, you know, all the sexy stuff, restaurants failing inspection and what they're talking about for the city budget and those sorts of things. But if you look at the, you know, classic long tail graph, there's more news along the bottom of it, although it's just not very high impact. It affects maybe the people who live directly around it, right? So how do you solve that? And the way that I sort of thought we might go about this was just getting as much data as possible. So again, with our satellite map of a city, let's take crime data, let's take all the building permits from the government, let's take all the Flickr photos that have been taken, let's take all the news articles that are being written about and seeing, figuring out which news articles are writing about which places in the city. And let's all slice and dice that by block, so that each one of those little segments has its own distinct web page that lets you see all the stuff around it. And that's essentially what we've done. I'll give you a quick tour of the site. We're only in 11 cities in America at the moment, but I would love to expand internationally. If anyone is interested in helping on a New Zealand version, come find me afterward. So I'll give you a quick tour. The main way that you interact with this is you go to the site, you select your city, and you enter your address or your neighborhood, depending on the level of granularity that you want. But if you were to enter an address, say this one in Chicago, you would get this page that has a timeline with all the recent stuff around that address. So I'm really excited about this little power keynote hack. I'm simulating the scroll of a web page by slides. Isn't that cool? So at the top here, you might see which nearby locations have been written about in the local media. So this might be kind of small for you to read. One of them says, let's see, rock star Chrissy Hynde joined the group in front of the Rock and Roll McDonald's at Clark in Ontario, which is only a couple blocks away from this. Executives from Boeing Company will co-chair a fundraiser tonight at the Hyatt Regency Chicago at 151 East Wacker, which is also right next door. This is the sort of thing where it might have been on page A25 of the newspaper, some, you know, tiny little blurb that you might not have seen. And our goal is to find that stuff so that you will get notified of it. Sort of the same thing behind RSS, right? There are so many sites out there, and you just use your feed reader to collect all of it in one place for you. So scrolling down the page, with my miraculous PowerPoint mojo, real estate listings. are fed into there. Crimes, all sorts of public records. So these four crimes happened. There was a simple battery. Someone got in trouble for possession of cannabis, and there were two thefts. Flickr photos, and photos from at least one other site, Panoramio. So these photos were taken in your neighborhood today. Moving down. This street, 50 West Washington Street, is going to be closed today due to a parade. So we're tapping into some public records there. These four businesses just were granted licenses. So these are new businesses in your neighborhood. And these three properties were recently transferred. So they sold for however much. And you can click through and read more about it. These two local restaurants were inspected and thankfully both passed. This is sort of a long tail concept of ours. If you rely on your local newspaper to hear about restaurant inspections, you're only going to hear about the big sexy ones, the famous fancy Italian restaurant that they find a huge rat in the kitchen or something. But it's just as important for you as a resident of a neighborhood to get notified when there's something happy that happens. It's reassuring. I can go eat there. I'm not going to, you know, throw up after my meal. Am I going to live today? Am I going to vomit today? Those are the two main themes of our site. And then finally, lost and found postings are another example. So we tap into some third-party sites like Craigslist and show you which lost and found postings have shown up in your neighborhood. Now, these are just a couple of examples. We have dozens and dozens of different pieces of data, all kind of wacky in their own way that we bring onto the site. Now, if you click on any one of these things, you'll get a detail page. So this is the page for this particular restaurant inspection, and that's where it happened, and these were the violations that they found, including a critical violation regarding vermin insect infestations. So you can click on that and then see all the other inspections that had that particular violation and where they happened throughout the city. And then you can continue to filter that, so here are all the restaurant inspections with that particular violation that happened in this particular neighborhood, which is called Lakeview. So we really encourage you to browse, and if you live in any of these cities, you really just, we've heard anecdotally that people just lose their whole day, like browsing around and exploring the information. And I'm going to talk about in a little bit how sort of the design philosophy behind that. And then we offer an RSS feed for every block. And you can customize it and say, crime information scares me. I don't want to see any crime, but I do want to see filming. So that's one of the data types we have in Chicago. You can get notified whenever a movie is being filmed in your neighborhood. I don't want to see photos because there's, you know, for whatever reason. And you can customize that and change your radius to be within one block of my house or three blocks or eight blocks, sort of the radii that we've found are most effective. So how does this all work? The first answer is a lot of very complicated technology. I think this is what computers looked like before I was born, but I'm not really sure. The first big part is a lot of natural language processing that crawls every local news source that we can find, including blogs, mainstream media, TV. Anything, we're not picky, anything that writes about the local neighborhood scene. And we identify addresses and intersections and neighborhoods and all sorts of anything that has to do with the place. It's getting, obviously it's not perfect, but it's getting better almost every day. And then, so we pull that into the mix. The second part is various web APIs, like the Flickr API, that's an obvious one, because it's just so well architected and it offers a way to search just the photos that have been geocoded, which is the ones that we want. And just a side note about Flickr, it's if you haven't played with their geocoding API, it's really, really well thought out because it not only lets you search for photos in a particular geographic area, it lets the users who submit the photos specify the granularity of their geocoding, the precision. So I, as a photo uploader, can say, I took this photo somewhere in this neighborhood. I only know to this level. And then with another photo, I might be able to say, I had a GPS. I know exactly it was right here. So thanks to that, we're able to pull out only the photos that are exactly pinpointed. And then a couple other sources. This isn't the whole list, but they're the prettiest icons. And then the third source, which is the major source, is government. So this is a city hall building in Chicago. And we do a ton of work in trying to open up this data by cold calling government officials and saying, hey, please open up your data. It belongs to the public, and we want to put it on our site. And I'll talk about that in a little bit. Actually, I'll talk about it right now. So this is lesson one. I have 10 lessons. That was sort of the overview. And I want to distill this stuff into lessons that you guys can take away. And lesson number one is take advantage of what already exists. Now, I really liked this particular feedback from a Twitter, random guy on Twitter, almost a year ago. Actually, just more than a year ago. And he said, what is refreshing about every block is that they're feeding me existing data in an interesting way instead of asking me to give them my data. And I just really, really like that concept because I'm tired of going to websites and being greeted with, hi, welcome to my rounded corner drop shadow Web 2.0 site. Please start giving us your data. I love the fact that people can come to our site and see what already exists. There's already so much stuff out there across the internet, and it's just crying out to be organized in a better way. And a specific example of that is that sorting by date really, really adds value. There are a million, or at least 100, startup ideas in here. There's so much information out there that is sort of appears like this. So this is a pretty lousy web interface for searching business licenses in the city of Chicago. It's sort of a classic government website where it's very hard to use, it's awkward, it doesn't really let you browse at all. It's just this search box. But if you search it, there's really, really good data there, right? It's every business in the city, which in some cases, in bigger cities, can be tens of thousands of businesses, and who the people are that run it, and where it is, the exact address, and how long it's been in business, and the day it got its license. And it's a really, really rich, great set of data, but they don't let you, they don't serve the very simple purpose of showing you what's new. What new neighborhoods have, or what new businesses have shown up in my neighborhood recently. So we do that, and we saw that as a huge opportunity. And I really would encourage you to think about what sort of data do I have available, or can I access that can be really improved tenfold, a hundredfold, if you only sort of turned it into a feed. A great example of this in the real world, in the wild, is FriendFeed. That's what they do. They take all your stuff and make a day-specific feed, right? Like select star from table, order by date ascending, right? It's really easy to do technically, but the hard part is getting the data and thinking to do that in the first place. So the third thing that I want to talk about is that it's sort of an old-fashioned truism and a cliche, but the more effort it takes to do something, the higher the reward is. This is something that we've found time and time again. So I've spoken with people at Google and Yahoo and all sorts of big companies, and they always sort of sniffle and sort of huff at me when I describe every block and all the work that we do to get all this data, and they say, well, Google would never do that. That's not a Google-scale problem, because Google really wants a convenient, centralized United States building permits database that they can just tap into once, and all of a sudden they have the entire country, and the world will be happy, and everyone will be able to search Google for building permits. Well, the world isn't like that. Every city, every town, every municipality stores its data in different ways, and no one really other than us is trying to pull it into a clean system that makes it easy for people to look at this stuff. And there's just a huge potential because of the fact that we're actually willing to do the work. Nobody else is crazy enough to do it. So I would really encourage you to think about something that would be so beneficial if only you did the work, right? Again, it's sort of maybe a lame thing to suggest. It's sort of obvious and cliche, but hard work really pays off. It's something that we think about all the time. And this sort of leads me into my second point. Sorry for the mouse. Woo! Governments are opening up, and the trend is only continuing in this direction. So we've compiled a couple of tips about how to talk with government officials and encourage them to open their data. I realize that everything's sort of different in New Zealand in terms of open public records laws. I just spent yesterday morning talking with some folks in the local government here about their efforts in trying to open their data. I will say that after my conversation with them, you guys are, your government is much more enlightened about this than people in the States. But if you're dealing with unenlightened people like we do, here are a couple of tips that we've had. Be nice. We have a person on our team full-time who calls governments and says, hey, you have some really interesting crime data that your police department collects but doesn't publish. We would love for you to publish that. We're not looking for any exclusivity. We just want you to publish it to the public so that we can then consume that and put it on every block. And we immediately, inevitably get, why should I do that? And the sort of the first argument that we make is, well, it's the right thing to do, right? You're in the government, you're serving the public, you are a civil servant. You're using our tax dollars to make things and provide services. We deserve that, right? And that actually kind of works in some cases. It depends on the person. Another argument that we give is sort of more focused on budgets and revenue. And we argue that the government should be doing what the government is, not only what the government is best at, but what the government can do that nobody else can do, like write parking tickets and arrest people and fix the potholes on the street and do all the city services. Nobody else is going to do that. There's not going to be any web startup or some startup business that's going to start ticketing vehicles on the street. So the government should focus on that, and they shouldn't spend their resources on creating interfaces to view data. So my local health department should not have a place that allows me to search all the health data in my neighborhood. Instead, they should just offer an API that releases the raw data to the public. And then third-party sites like Everyblock, whoever, we don't care, would be able to then do that job for free as far as the government's concerned. And of course, there's concerns about the data being shedding a bad light on the government or it being incomplete. And I think that's just something that would work itself out naturally. The more sites that use it, the more competition there is in the marketplace, and people tend to flock to the best sites. And then another argument that we make, it's more of a strategy than an argument, is to plot cities against each other. So we'll go to New York City and say, hey, the guys in the Chicago Police Department is releasing really good crime data. What, you guys aren't as good as Chicago? Come on. And that hasn't worked for New York Police Department because they're sort of this special case and that's caused me a lot of high blood pressure. But it has worked for other cities, especially smaller cities compared to bigger cities. We originally launched with New York City, Chicago, and San Francisco. And our fourth city was Charlotte, North Carolina, and which is very much smaller, sort of second tier in comparison population-wise. And when we approached them about helping us out, they saw, oh, wow, Chicago, New York City, San Francisco, around the list. Wow, and we're number four? Yeah, we'll help you out. So that's an interesting little strategy. And find another strategy that we take that is much more focused on the bottom line and budgets is that if you just put your data all out there, you being a government, that means that your freedom of information official, your public official who deals with information requests will have essentially not nearly as much as work as he needs to do. So in giving us, in making the data available for free, you won't have to deal with journalists asking for specific reports and all that sort of stuff. And then it actually does resonate with some of these folks. So moving into some technical takeaways that we've had. So mashups, the whole world of mashups is sort of came out of Google Maps and mapping mashups. So generally, I think that, I don't know the raw numbers on this, but I think that probably a majority of mashups tend to involve a map. I think there's a site called Programmable Web that actually has raw numbers on how many mashups there are in the world on the web and what percentage of them exactly uses Google Maps. But I'm a bit strong advocate of the argument that you shouldn't just have a map. It shouldn't just be the map and that's the entire web application. It should be more of a site and an entire application that spans many pages rather than just a single page. I'm going to pick on one mashup that I've seen, and I've tried to deliberately obscure it here so that you don't know where it is and what site it is. But this is the entire site. And you go there, and it's a crime mashup. And you can select the type of crime with that selector at the top left. And you can select the date range and then filter it theme. I think maybe that might be the color scheme of the markers. I don't know why someone would want to choose that. Anyway, you got the various ways of sorting it up there. And that's it. That's the entire application. And I think that sucks. And here's why. I can't, as a user, say pickpocketing on February 2nd, and boom, 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 show me all the records. And I can't say, oh, that's the one. I committed that. I want to email it to my friends. Like, how would I do that, right? I would have to say, hey, George, go to this site, and then go to crimes, and then do pickpocketing, and then put this day, and then zoom on to this part of the city, and then you'll see my great work, right? It's not web-friendly. It's sort of this JavaScript thing that sort of doesn't interact with the web. Now, counterpoint to that, I want to, in support of that, I want to offer this question that we try to ask ourselves all the time. Will our site or will this new feature work without maps? Because it's very rare that a feature is wholly dependent on maps, at least in our case. And what I mean by that is the map on our site is sort of this thing on the side, but the geography, the geospatial query that you're making is inherent to the page because this web page, which represents the 1800 to 1808, that string of addresses on this street called West Belmont Avenue, this page contains everything, and it's already done the geographic query for you. So you don't have to rely on a map to zoom and pan it into the area that you want. It's all done there for you. And geospatial querying and open source GIS stuff has just come a long, long way in the past, like, couple years, really, really less immediate past. And it's possible to do this completely for free using open source software, so you don't need to rely on the map being the primary navigation. So we think about this all the time. On a related note, we're super strong believers in permalinking everything. So you kind of saw an example of this earlier with my run through the site and my run through chicagocrime.org, which sort of have those same philosophies. But there's a page, for instance, for this crime, which is great because I can email it to my friends or post it on Facebook. But also, whenever it makes sense, those attributes of this crime are all links. And our philosophy is that anything that can be a link should be a link. Very much influenced by sites like IMDb, where you go there and you're browsing a film and all of a sudden you click a director and you're browsing that director's films and you click some random piece of trivia and then you start clicking on this. it just makes for a much more immersive, webby experience, right? So I can click on one of those things, and here's a page for all the crimes that happened in a park, because on this page, this particular crime happened on a park, in a park. And another philosophy here is you don't know why someone is interested in this page. You don't know whether it's because they committed it or they're looking for crimes in their neighborhood, so around the 3,000 block of North Hoyne Avenue, or whether they're researching crime on this day, in this time range, or whether they're interested in park crime, or a combination of all that stuff. So make it all linkable. We're just obsessed with this. So here's, you click park property, you get a list of all the park property crimes, and then you can click on the day and see all the crimes that happened on February 9th, and then you can continue to narrow that down. So here's every crime that happened on February 9th within 8 blocks of this particular block. So it's just crazy linkability, and the thing about this is that every query, every additional filter that I've added appends to the URL so that it's completely permalinkable. There's no icky session cookies, any of that stuff. There's a special place in hell for session cookies. Spoken as someone from someone who's spends a lot of time every day screen scraping government websites and trying to get around them. If you're using session cookies to hide data from people, it doesn't work because we can get around it. It only causes pain. Another benefit of this sort of everything is a link and these permalinks is that the SEO kind of goes through the roof. So because there's a page for restaurant inspections in the Lakeview neighborhood of Chicago, if someone searches Google for restaurant inspections like in Chicago, boom, there you go, it's the number one hit. And we get just a tremendous amount of traffic from Google searches and other searches for these very specific queries. And the whole reason they find us is because we have the pages that create that. Now that other Google Maps mashup that I showed previously, you know, doesn't get this at all because it's just one page, you can click around on it, and it doesn't change the URL. It's sort of this JavaScript thing that is not happy. Another interesting side product of, or byproduct of being sort of religious about permalinks is something that I hadn't really considered before doing it, and it's it makes your site future-proof in terms of other features that you want to add. So because, or one day we decided it would be really cool if we could give you a little trend for your immediate neighborhood, so your block, like within one block of your block or 8 blocks of the crime trends specific to you over time. And we did that, and you can, this is just a very narrow screenshot of that particular piece of the page, but it's a little timeline of the crime right around your house. And we wanted to enable it so that people can click on any one of those days and get all the crime on that particular day. And voila, we already had a page for all the crimes around this address on that particular day. So that made it really, really easy to do. Does that make sense, sort of the future-proofing concept that those very granular URLs get you? And speaking of URLs, I wanted to give a couple of tips on exactly how we think about this. It's actually stupidly simple, I'll admit. So you look at, so if we're designing the URLs, and sorry if this is super geeky, I guess I shouldn't apologize for that at Webstock, but I love URLs and I sort of think about them before I think about anything else. I dream about them at night. So if you have crime data, and say it looks like this, we have five attributes of every crime, and so this would be the columns in your table, right? Say it's a date, you got a type of crime, the address, location type, which is something like an apartment building or a hotel or a beautiful municipal building, or a case number, which is something like HL10999. So how would we design the URLs for this application, assuming that we want to make it as browsable as possible? Well, basically, you make a route for every one of those where it makes sense. So for date, you would just make /crime/dates, and that's a list of all the dates. Type of crime/crime/types, and that lists all the types down the road. Case number, it wouldn't really make sense for there to be /case numbers and a list of all the case numbers, unless you're like really into SEO and want to make sure that there are links with containing the case number or something for some reason. I don't know. I wouldn't do it personally. And then it becomes really easy to just add the next step, which is every particular record within that type of information. So these are the individual rows of the table. So there would be not only a page for every listing the types, there would be a page for every type. So easy stuff, right? And you can kind of generalize this into the rule that the URL structure is like database table name slash the column name, like the date or the crime type, and then slash the value of that column, and then that gives you all the records for that. And I use this all the time. I almost feel guilty using it because it's like it's so easy and it's so the right thing to do that I almost feel like bored doing it. It's become so the right thing to do. But Flickr uses this, Delicious uses this, all sorts of sites use it. I've used it in all sorts of projects. And in fact, if you use the Django web framework, it comes with this thing called Data Browse, which will look at your database and automatically give this treatment to it. So it will automatically inspect your database schema, and it will automatically inspect your data and then create a site that looks something like this that it wasn't really easily captured in a single snapshot, but it lets you browse your data. And it's really, really cool just to, because if a computer creates these relationships automatically, just being really stupid about it, it in some cases unearths interesting ways of browsing that you might not have thought. So I did this, I ran Data Browse on something that I was working on at the Washington Post newspaper, which is a database of every vote made in the United States Congress. So Barack Obama voted on this particular vote, and he voted yes, and this person voted no on this day. And I put it in there, and one of the things that it gave me was a way to browse all the members of Congress by birthday, because one of the fields happened to be the birthday of the member of Congress. And I never would have thought to do that, but it's kind of cool because the computer doesn't really care. It sees, oh, it's a date. We should offer a way of drilling down by date. So definitely check out Data Browse. Lesson 8 is sort of along the same lines of the geospatial world, and that's move beyond points. This is a huge pet peeve of mine. When I do a search on like Google Maps, I don't want to just pick on Google Maps, but a search on some geographic site for Wellington, New Zealand, and it's right there. Not 1 meter to the side. No, it's right there, right? It's ludicrous. So web applications that use geospatial stuff ought to be respectful of the fact that points are not the only thing out there. There are points, there are lines, there are polygons. And Wellington is a polygon. It's a nice big area that has a border. It's not just one point in the middle. And we try to adhere to that philosophy on our site. So this is a screenshot from Every Block. This was a particular news article that said, an influential panel, blah, 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 wants to upgrade Michigan Avenue between the Chicago River and Millennium Park. So if you think about that just sort of from a news perspective, that affects a strip of the street. So Michigan Avenue between the river and Millennium Park. So we're not going to just pick the point in the middle and plot it like that. We're going to actually do the real line because it's inaccurate to do it otherwise. And if we're dealing with such a granular level and someone lived at the very southern tip of that and just had a one-block radius, that person would not see this come up, even though it was directly relevant to him, if we just use that centroid, because it would be too far from him. Same thing for like neighborhoods or even arbitrary areas. Like this is an example from our site that we found in an article. They mentioned the area on the west side between Ashland and Western Avenues from Lake Street on the north to Harrison Streets on the south. And we geocoded that to that specific area. Isn't that just beautiful? For all the OCD people like me, just having that just boom, right there. So if you live anywhere in there, you'll see it show up. It's not just some centroid that we picked, some center point, you know. It's the actual boundary. Here's a public record in San Francisco that the San Francisco Water Department is working on excavating a part of the street, and that part of the street is an L. So if we just pick one point, that'd be really lame. It's a nice L. And so this whole thing isn't really helped by the fact that a lot of the tools out there, a lot of the various specifications and stuff, assume everyone's just dealing with points. So there's GeoRSS. Maybe you've heard of this. It's a way of adding geo stuff to your RSS feeds, but it only lets you add a single point to your blog post. So if you are doing like a review of various restaurants in a neighborhood, maybe you might be writing about five. How do you express that in a single point? You can't. So there are some fundamental flaws with a lot of the specifications that assume that we're only dealing with one point, and it's time to move past that. I've been talking to these guys and suggested that, and we came up with a decent extension to GeoRSS that would allow for some more granular and points and lines and polygons to be expressed in there, but it kind of got poo-pooed because, well, no one wants to do the work of geocoding all your blog entries to like 5 points. Let's just pick one. You know, it's that excuse that people are just lazy, so let's use the easiest thing that could possibly work. I like that, but then again, I don't like that when it comes to perfectionism. Lesson number 9, I think, is something that we're excuse me, we're trying to like campaign. It's almost like we're on a political campaign to spread this message, and that's to roll your own maps. So Google Maps is great. I started out hacking on those a couple years ago. They've done a great job bringing mapping technology, you know, to the 21st century. It's fantastic. But now that it's been around for a couple years, there are a couple of problems with it, and I wouldn't advise using it for your geospatial applications, and here's why. The first point is they're very, very familiar. If you go to, you know, you're browsing some site and you're really into it, and then you see a Google Maps map, and it's like the same color, and then you browse to another site and you see a Google Maps thing, and you browse to another site, and after a while, it's just like, oh yeah, it's just another Google Maps mashup. It doesn't even matter what the design is, or it's just like, it's another Google Maps mashup. So it's so cliche. It's like, I'll bring that up in a bit. Oh, it's like using a WordPress template for your corporate website, right? Would you go and design your fancy schmancy corporate website using like some WordPress or default movable type template? Come on. No, you got standards. You got design standards. And that same philosophy, I would argue, applies to maps. The problem is that you can't really customize this stuff. So this is a Google map zoomed in for a section of Chicago. And look at all that stuff on there. You got your one-way lines. You got your, even the addresses, the numbers of the addresses. You have the bus stops. You have the subway stations. You have the building footprints that are all fancy in 3D. And then you have some building names in some cases. That stuff gets in the way if all you want to do is visualize data. It's really, really good for what it was intended to be doing, which is wayfinding. So I'm lost. I'm consulting the map to help me find wherever the hell this building is, or I'm driving in this area. I need to know whether it's a one-way street or not. But in our case, we're just using a map to visualize data, and we find that all gets in the way. So if you compare that to every block maps, which we roll their own, I'll explain that in a second, it's just the bare bones needed. So it's just streets in gray, which represents land, and then there's like some green, and the water is blue, and it's all very sort of mellow in color. It matches the rest of our site. And when you use something like Google Maps, and I don't just mean to pick on them, any third-party map provider, Yahoo, Microsoft, MapQuest, you're locked in to their colors, their color scheme. So, you know, it may completely clash with the rest of your site. Our designer, this guy Wilson Miner, who's awesome, is very OCD. This seems to be a common thread here, come to think of it, about making the site just as good as possible and the design as perfect as possible. And therefore, the colors of the map were designed to complement the colors of the rest of the site. And we can do that because we rolled our own maps. If we were using a third-party mapping provider, it'd be like this bright blue and this bright orange. It's like almost circus-y. And we want to control not only the colors, but all the stuff that you see. So like I was just showing, you don't see any one-way symbols. You don't see any building footprints. None of that stuff. We want to control how thick the streets are at certain zoom levels. We want to control the fact that when you zoom out at a certain level, you don't even see the streets, or you see just the highways. When you roll your own maps, you have all that control. It's really, really awesome. It's like, you know, like what you've come to expect in designing a website, but it's for your maps. It's time to jump into that. So the specific tools that we use are outlined here. MapNIC is this open source library that is in charge of, that renders maps. So you give it map data, which you can essentially think of it as a database of this street goes from this point to this point, and then there's a little curve over here. And then you give it whatever other data that you have that's geospatial, so your water. So this river goes like this, and it gets a little wider over here, it turns, and here's the railways or whatever you want to put on it. It's up to you to get that data, and that can be the problem. But things like OpenStreetMap are aimed at solving that, and getting that geodata open to everyone. So MapNIC does that, and that's also the part where you specify, I want the water to be this exact hex code of blue, and I want the streets to be exactly this thick, 5 pixels thick, and to have a 1 pixel border or not. And all that stuff, MapNIC, it's phenomenal. And it's made by Russians, which means it's good. All the good software is made by Russians. And then there's something called Tilecache, which is below it in the level, and that handles caching. And then there's something called OpenLayers, which works at the JavaScript level. And then finally, we use Django on the back end. And very, very quickly, you can search for the phrase take control of your maps. And my colleague on the EveryBlock team has written an article on A List Apart that outlines how to do that. And then very, very quickly, I wanted to end on this note, which is make a mashup. So I can't cook. I rely on going to restaurants and you know, relying on professionals who are good at cooking. But what I'm good at is making websites, and what you guys are good at is making websites. So I think that just a very, very satisfying thing to do is to find some data out there that's poorly presented or that isn't quite what a user might need, and just make something better with it. That's sort of my personal challenge to all of you. Go out and make a mashup. It's very, very satisfying. And I'm completely out of time, so thanks very much.